RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
And me, Beans. We had like a major issue that happened with this, with the show. And we lost about 20 seconds of it, but it took me about 20 minutes to figure out what was going on. So we're doing it a different way and hoping and praying for the best. We were talking before we got rudely interrupted about 9/11 because today is that day. And we were just kind of reminiscing with one another about how it was 18 years ago. And I asked my daughter this morning what they do at school because, you know, you'd think that they would make a deal of this. And she said they don't really do anything. And then Frank was telling us about baseball. So I guess we can continue off there.
I was just saying that I was noticing the disparity in what everybody would be, just the disparity in age at this point. First of all, a lot of the new teachers that are either getting their classroom, their apprenticeships or anything like that. They were all infants when 9/11 happened. Teachers,
years old.
Yeah, I mean, you're having your first legal drink now. If you were born in 1998, that means you were three.
Oh gosh,
that means you were three in 2001. All right, that's, you're having your first legal drink this year. So it's nuts. I remember looking down at my first roster of children on my Little League team in 2006 and seeing 1995, 1996, saying to myself, wow, they were born when I was 10, 11 years old. And it was, and now I'm looking at these birthdays every February when I get my roster again, and we're talking, oh man, so many years after the fact. It's ancient history. It really has become the Alamo now.
Yeah, people, you know, you want to keep this memory of this, you know, alive and well for folks, because it affected so many people in such a horrible way, but it needs to be remembered, not like, you know, Omar and some people did something. This was like an attack on U.S. soil. It was different than the war and things like that, you know. I just want my kids to understand how important and impactful this was and how horrible it was and what happened afterwards and the beauty of what happened in the wake of it in terms of people just being united in this country for as short of a period as it lasted. I don't know we'll ever see that again.
Children need to understand it, if not for any reason but this, that the current, that there is a world that existed before 9/11 they will never, ever be able to conceive of. This is a world that was free from TAPS Act and red flag laws and weaponization of psychology and banning music and the TSA and DHS and data collection. And now you combine that with generations that don't know life before 9/11. And you have a little bit better understanding of how we have identity politics and socialism as a cure for all of the world's most scary things. And you're surprised. I mean, the Patriot Act, you know, the Patriot Act is a 300-page document that was passed within a month after the attack. 300 pages.
The Patriot Act was basically the downfall of privacy in this country for every American citizen. It was,
I mean, horrible. That's really all people need to understand about this. It's a solemn day because you're talking about the death of thousands. No matter how you look at this day, it's very solemn because of the lives lost. But what it meant for the rest of the world, oh my God. Oh my God.
And the NDAA and all the legislation that was passed and the wars that were started and the people that died and those and the wars that are still ongoing to this day from then. You know, if we've been in war since 2001, almost 20 years, and that in and of itself is history that needs to be focused on in school. Like, I don't understand how you could not at least acknowledge a moment of silence today in your classrooms with your kids. I just don't get it. But I mean, it is what it is. Mm. Just my uncle, I did an interview with him last year. He was here. And I did an interview with him. He was a first responder on 9/11. And I put it on my Twitter thread yesterday so people can watch him. He's really, really ill. He's not the same person. He was one of the people that spearheaded the Zadroga bill in New York City and worked really hard for victims of this that are still alive today because of what they endured down there. And I'll never forget Christine Todd Whitman declaring to everybody how safe it was to breathe the air the day after 9/11.
Day after.
Day after, with all that asbestos in the air and the soot and everything.
And still defends her position on it. Still defends that, defends herself, saying that she was working with the best information possible. When you can take a look at the quality of the air just by the haze that was going on, was out there. Not only that, but just the era in which those buildings were all constructed and the materials they were constructed with, the asbestos especially. To say that anybody out there should be wearing anything less than a full hazmat suit if you must go in there for rescue efforts is ridiculous, just on common sense alone. But of course, there's your EPA. There's the government agencies that everybody says, if we abolish them, how would we ever survive? I don't know. They're the ones that told us that Southern Manhattan was perfectly fine to breathe hours after the towers fell.
Okay.
How would we ever survive without the EPA?
I don't know. I mean, you know, they know what's best, right, Frank? They know what's best for us. And not only that, but there were a lot of people that went down there to do food stuff and regular everyday people volunteering down there that did not have any protection at all. It was crazy. I just, oh, goodness. I'm moving on from this because I have spent the entire morning and it just destroys my soul and makes me a mess. So we're going to just say our condolences and prayers and move on to news. And I just want to say, too, I'm watching my software here and I'm feeling like there's an echo coming through when you're talking if I don't mute my microphone. So bear with me as I kind of mute and unmute during the show while you're in the midst of speaking.
Okay.
All right. So I wanted to touch on a bunch of stuff. A large majority of the show today is going to be Flynn because a lot of stuff happened yesterday. I have, thanks to AKA Dirty on Twitter, I was trying to clip the Hannity show last night, Frank, was incredible.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So he had Herridge on in the beginning of the show talking about the CIA source that was apparently outed or whatever, this big mess of a story we're going to get into in a second. And then after that, she had Sarah Carter on talking about a memo released internally that exonerated Flynn completely from any ties to Russia in January of 2017. And then she had Sidney Powell and Judge Jeanine Pirro on, to talk about the Flynn case. And actually, Hannity allowed Powell to just kind of go. And Judge Jeanine tried to kind of poke in to get some time. But it was really a great segment. We're going to listen to a lot of it today and talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely would like to know a little bit more about the spy in Russia, because there's a few angles I want to flesh that out from.
So we're going to go to Jeff Carlson to talk about this, because he did a really good job breaking it all down. We'll put the link to this article in the show notes. It says, on September 9th, CNN reported that in a previously undisclosed secret mission in 2017... the United States successfully extracted from Russia one of its highest level covert sources inside the Russian government. And they wrote that the knowledge of the Russian covert source's existence was highly restricted within the government and intelligence agencies. And according to one source, there was no equal alternative inside the Russian government, providing both insight and information on Putin. And then the article says that the decision to remove the mole within the Kremlin was driven by concerns that Trump and those within his administration had mishandled classified intelligence, thereby compromising the source's safety. And they cite this 2017 meeting between Trump, Sergey Lavrov, and Sergey Kislyak, where I don't know if you remember this at the time, they claimed that Trump had given out classified intelligence provided by Israel regarding ISIS activities in Syria. And this meeting happened a day after Comey was fired. And the news went nuts. Oh my God, he's giving away classified information. Meanwhile, they had reported on it weeks earlier. So it was one of those things.
It's almost as if the news isn't the news.
The news. They're not the, yeah. I mean, they're not the news. They are the single biggest threat to our national security at this point that I've ever seen.
Because you think about it here too, what they often do and what is, has become their forte actually, is taking timelines of events and deliberately skewing them to be able to create a reality that they think they can control better, instead of just telling people what happened when it happened. And they'll sandbag you too. They won't report on something that happens weeks earlier, so that when they do report on it weeks later, it sounds like, I don't know, very nefarious kind of news that can come out in a more convenient time for them. So I hate that they still have any kind of sway on public opinion. I really do.
Well, they got worse, Frank. They got actually worse. You know, they asked, there was a conference between Mnuchin and Pompeo, and they asked about the substance of this article that CNN wrote. And Mike Pompeo says this, quote, "It was egregious and material inaccurate. I've seen the reporting. The reporting is material and inaccurate. And you should know, as a former CIA director, I don't talk about things like this very often. It's only the occasion when there's something that I think puts people at risk, or the reporting is so egregious as to create enormous risk to the United States of America, that I even comment the way I just did. And I won't say anything more about it. I know the CIA put out a statement, which is really, really out of character. I mean, that never happens. He goes, to suffice it to say, the reporting is factually wrong. Then, as to not be outdone by fake news CNN, NBC, Ken Delanian, you know Ken Delanian.
Yeah.
He discloses that he goes to the Russian source's home on September 9th and confirmed the general location of where the whereabouts of the source. So for people that are worried about protecting sources and how grave it is to share this information, NBC basically doxed the dude and his family.
Well, they're doing God's work, don't you know?
I mean they are. They're
doing great work. Now let me ask you something real quick, because I'm seeing this from a couple of different standpoints, because I was wondering a few things here. They're getting this source out of Russia in 2016. Are we looking at a, obviously it is not anything that has to do with Donald Trump, even though that's the one way it's been spun. But could this potentially have anything to do with John Brennan and the reason why he was in Moscow? You remember in that, what was it, 2016, 2015, everybody was talking about the Brennan trip to Moscow. Could this guy have been a missing piece of his operation?
You know, what's crazy about that is that CNN had Brennan on for something else yesterday and didn't mention it at all. They didn't even ask him a question about this. You'd think with such an egregious, horrible act by the president of the United States in regards to a CIA asset in Russia next to Putin, they would ask Brennan what his opinion of this is. They didn't ask him a thing. I don't know. It could have something to do with it. All I know is I was sent an article by somebody that was in Russian language from that time period in 2017. And It was an article that was describing a diplomat who disappeared with his family after going on vacation and never came back. And I decided not even to put it out on Twitter because it named him. So there's a responsible way to handle journalism, and what these people are doing isn't it. It gets even worse and more convoluted though, Frank, because the New York Times came out and refuted the CNN article. The New York Times came out and attacked the CNN piece. They said that the article was based on interviews in recent months with current and former officials who spoke on the condition that their names not be used because they're discussing classified information. I don't know. Doesn't that make the New York Times journalists criminals?
Yes.
Okay.
But they're not journalists. This is the thing.
Well, if they weren't journalists, then they wouldn't technically have any protection at all.
Right, well, they would be. You can say that it's just creative writing. They write fan fiction, or they're, I don't know. If you know how they can probably. They can probably protect themselves if they can write in sex scenes in all of these stories. If they can find a way to write in sex scenes into these stories just to spice it up a little bit, maybe people will say, okay, well, they're just messing around at least. They're messing around. It's not real.
I would love to read a sex scene in the midst of a New York Times article. I mean, at least if I'm forced to read these things, they should be somewhat entertaining.
Yes, yes. And not just so scary and deliberately destructive.
Yeah. So the New York Times says that the source wasn't actually part of Putin's inner circle, but saw him regularly and had access to high-level Kremlin decision-making. Now, I'm just going to stop before we go on and just make mention of the same thing that Undercover Huber said yesterday, which is, if this is true, and there was this source inside of Russia right next to Putin during the midst of all of this, how and why in the hell didn't Obama's government utilize that source to figure out what the hell was going on with the disinformation and election fraud that supposedly was happening during that time? Why weren't they using that source to get to the bottom of Russian collusion?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that amazing? Listen, they were the biggest, the Obama administration was the biggest deniers of any kind of threat to our election systems, just for all the common sense reasons that you look at from coast to coast. The United States exists in what, like 4 or 5 time zones, 50 states, each state that runs their elections their own different way. You're telling me that with the $6,000 on Google and the $100,000 split between 3 candidates before and after the election in 2016 on Facebook, that they were able to impact the election in 6 time zones? In 50 states?
That's what they're saying, Frank.
Yeah, well, I think that Barack Obama was right when he said, hey, there's no way the elections are safe. Stop whining, go out there and make your case to get votes. Well, Trump got the votes. And then what happened? Oh, we were completely infiltrated. It's the stupidest.
The article, which effectively discredits points in CNN's reporting, noted that CIA officials became concerned over the source's safety during governmental allegations of Russian election interference and made a decision in late 2016 to offer to extract the source from Russia. The source refuses the CIA's offer, but after mounting media inquiries, the source agreed to move in 2017. So in other words, the media is the reason why this source was compromised. Later, the author of that CNN article acknowledges on Twitter that the United States had offered extraction months earlier during Obama's administration, but the asset refused, and the asset's information was crucial to the IC assessment that Putin had directed election interference to favor Trump. Now, it gets very interesting, because who is investigating right now the Russian collusion fairy tale story? And what report is due to come out any day now?
I don't know. Remind me.
We've got Durham doing this investigation, and we've got the FISA report coming out. It says here, on June 12th, 2019, the New York Times reported that DOJ officials plan to, quote, interview senior CIA officers as they review the investigation into Russia, noting that investigators are, quote, focused partly on the intelligence agency's most explosive conclusion about the 2016 election, that President Vladimir Putin of Russia intervened to benefit Trump. Specifically, John Durham intended to talk with at least one senior counterintelligence official and a senior CIA analyst. The newspaper reported both of them were involved in the agency's work on understanding the Russian campaign to sabotage the election in 2016. So is there a chance that this guy was questioned and either gave information unflattering to the folks involved here, maybe saying, I don't know what they're talking about because I was right there and there was none of this going on inside Russia? Or, yeah, I was trying to warn them that they were feeding them disinformation just to do this thing, and they've refused to listen to me, instead embracing it. And now they're trying to get out in front of this to taint the guy altogether, so that when the report comes out, everybody's like, oh, it's that source that got extracted because of Trump. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they have not adequately explained why at that time in 2016 his extraction would have anything to do with Trump. The investigation had not gone anywhere. The fake narrative was still being pieced together at that time, and the formal investigation, the special counsel, still had months and months to go before that was launched. So I'm trying to understand. I mean, no matter what, it seems like a very weak thing to have to try to get out ahead of, because there's nothing makes sense as far as the chronology of everything.
Well, Carlson goes on in his piece to piece together the answer to that very question, or the answer to that very theory that you just said. He talks about in here all of the different examples of when this source may have been talked about in hearings, briefings, testimony by other people. And we're not going to get into the rest of it because it is very long, but I really recommend that you guys read this article. It's, as always, very good work by Jeff. And this source has been, apparently, as per Jeff here, a mainstay in this story and an important piece of it. So I don't know if they're trying to start to plant the seeds that this guy was a double agent. He was working for Russia too. That's why he didn't want to be extracted. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was just the beginning, and CNN, as they do with most things, completely screwed it up. I don't know, but let's listen to some clips from Catherine Herridge on this story.
Sure.
And hope that this works out okay. We're going to hope that this works out okay. Hold on. All right, here we go.
Efforts to smear, slander, besmirch, destroy the president of the United States. Well, you have your media mob reporting.
You know what I'm going to do? Forget that. I'm going to play Catherine Herridge.
Very own Catherine Herridge. For the CIA to come out the way they did, as strongly as they did, this is not something that happens very often, does it, Catherine?
Well, that's right, Sean. There is no harder decision for the CIA than pulling an intelligence asset. And based on my two decades covering intelligence, I can tell you it's a very deliberate process. And the final call is always based on multiple factors, not a single event or individual. And responding to the CNN report blaming the president's handling of classified information, the agency took the unusual step of issuing this response. Quote, misguided speculation that the president's handling of our nation's most sensitive intelligence, which he has access to each and every day, drove an alleged exfiltration operation, is inaccurate. Citing anonymous sources, CNN reported the president's May 2017 disclosure of classified information to the Russians about terrorism was a pivotal moment, renewing discussions among intelligence officials about the asset's risk of exposure. But the Oval Office meeting was described to Fox News as, quote, irrelevant to the CIA's decision-making. And Fox News has learned that the intelligence report about Russia's election interference released to the public during the transition from the Obama to Trump White House, as well as media reporting that focused on the Russian sources' proximity to President Vladimir Putin, were major factors for the agency. It's important to know that the CIA does not pull an asset based on a single factor, because once the asset is pulled, they can't go back into play. And significantly, the asset's remaining network of contacts inside that country, in this case Russia, could be retaliated against, Sean.
All right, Catherine Herridge.
It was the media's fault, and I guess the CIA and Brennan were willing to just give up that source and the how. I mean, wow. Think about that. You get somebody that close to Putin inside of Russia, and you burn the entire operation because the media in this country just can't keep their mouths shut. And the reason the media had the information in the first place is because you gave it to them?
Mm-hmm.
How messed is that?
Oh, it is. It's almost as messed up as getting it straight from the horse's mouth at the New York Times that we dedicated our entire operation to Russian collusion, and now we are rededicating our entire operation to racism, because the entire reason for our existence is to influence national politics and global politics in the way that we have been brought up to think, and not by actually following the creed of whatever kind of profession that they had pledged themselves to earlier on in life. It's just the same thing over and over again. And you know something, these kind of problems, we bring it up and it always comes back to the same thing. These kind of problems are endemic in human beings. That's just the way it is. To think that you're ever going to get rid of the kind of scheming, two-faced, duplicitous nonsense that comes out of people like John Brennan and all of his fellow travelers in the media and the intelligence community. You're never going to rid the world of people like that. All you have to do is just make sure that there is no structure, infrastructure for them to inhabit and to take control of that has any kind of given authority over large swaths of people. You have to make sure that that kind of system does not exist, because you're not going to shake this kind of behavior and this kind of action and tendency out of the human condition. You're not going to do it. So it pops up everywhere. We're always shocked to hear just how much the lengths to which people in the media or elsewhere went to either cover up truth, to omit certain parts of the truth, to just wield things to their advantage. We're always so shocked to see how far they'll go to make things the way they want it. But it's our story. That's just the story of us. So, I mean, It shouldn't be shocking. We just need to take away all of the, we have to defang them. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's the only way. And we're doing that by replacing them. I mean, they're becoming more and more irrelevant because people were set with, okay, this is the news and this is the truth. And people know that that's not the case anymore. So they were conditioned to think that this is where you get your truth. Now they know they can't get it there anymore because, you know, these people are blatantly showing who they are at this point. And I had an argument with someone in a thread underneath Zoe Tillman's live thread of the Flynn hearing yesterday, who was saying, lock them up, send them to jail for life, get rid of them. I'm like, I hope you same people are saying the same exact thing when your buddy McCabe is sitting up there. I hope you're saying the same thing because he did far worse, far worse. Because Flynn did nothing, legitimately nothing. And Andrew McCabe lied to investigators under oath four times while being recorded.
I saw those types of comments. And once again, I just averted my eyes. I had to walk away because it was just too much to see these mindless robots.
Really?
With the lock them away. Oh yeah, tell me the story. I wish I could pull some of these idiots, however many of them are actually real people. I wish I could pull some of these idiots out of internet land, sit them down and say, tell me the story of Michael Flynn. Go ahead.
They can't.
Start from the beginning.
They can't. They'll tell you the Logan Act, blah, 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 blah.
Talk to the Russians. What does that mean? Go ahead. Tell me what he talked to the Russians mean. Go ahead.
Yeah. And when?
Well, Joy Behar said you. No, Joy Behar's a stupid crow. So let's go back to the beginning again. What does talk to the Russians mean? Can't stand it.
I feel you. Let's get into Flynn now. So there was a hearing yesterday. It was supposed to be just a status conference and ended up being much, much more. And I'm very disappointed because I always read Zoe's threads because she is, I thought, very balanced, even though she's from BuzzFeed. She covers all their court and legal stuff. And she's usually very middle of the road, balanced, just the facts, ma'am, type of a girl when she tweets. And I looked at her thread yesterday, which made it almost pessimistic in terms of what was going on, even though it wasn't. She was kind of like, oh, this is a big deal, but it was not a big deal for the reasons that she was making it out to be a big deal. And then I looked at Will Chamberlain, who did a thread where he said that the judge could not stop smiling the entire hearing when he was going back and forth with Powell. So let's go over a little bit of my kind of stuff that I thought yesterday. One of the things that was, so they go in and they're talking about the exculpatory material, the Brady material that's being withheld. And Sidney Powell begins making her case for it. And the judge says, even though he already pled guilty, my Brady ruling stands, meaning he still needs exculpatory information. And Sidney Powell's making the case that he was, even though they had it before he pled guilty, he wasn't provided with any of the stuff they had that would prove, you know, that would prove that he would be found innocent, or there was absolutely no case here. And instead, they threatened the hell out of the dude with all kinds of stuff and forced him basically into a plea under pressure. So he pleads guilty. And then all of this information starts coming out and they provide none of it to him. And there's a back and forth between her and the judge says, you know, are you going to withdraw your plea to this case? And Powell says, no, actually, I'm looking for this entire case to be dismissed for egregious prosecutorial misconduct. She wants everything just dismissed. She doesn't want to have to withdraw the plea and go to trial. She wants the judge to dismiss the case. And then the judge asks the government attorneys, are you going to stick by the sentencing guidelines that you had recommended previously? And I think the reason why everyone's like, oh no. I think the reason why the judge asked that question is because let's say, you know, this whole time the government's been saying he's been exemplary and cooperative and he's been doing everything we asked and he's donated all these hours and time and he's been forthcoming with information. He's giving us everything. That's what the story's been. Now, all of a sudden, there's a new legal team in town who doesn't buy the BS that was being sold. Not for nothing. Their whole other case on the Farah is about to blow up in smoke, too. I almost suspect that that conviction will be overturned as well. But now, all of a sudden, the new attorneys come in and they're riding the rodeo with the cloud of smoke behind them. And now the government changes their mind about all the things they said previously. What does that seem like to you?
I don't know. It seems like this has been screwed from the beginning. And what I wanted to ask you about in particular is that I have seen a few people make comments about how General Flynn had fallen victim to his own legal representation for the first length of this nonsense that he's going through. Can you give me any, is there any kind of light you can shed on that way of thinking? Was he really being represented by untrustworthy people or just people who made good intentioned bad decisions?
I don't know which of the two it was, but yes, he was being represented by people that were not doing the right job for him. And it's my understanding, and by the way, talk to Joe, we'll have him next week.
Okay.
So, Joe Flynn, it's my understanding that this guy was us, the team they brought in were absolute specialists on Farah. And so that's why they were brought in, because they had like the best of the best Farah counsel. And I don't know if that contributed to it, but basically they wanted him to roll over and just take the plea, shut up, do what they got to do, but didn't care to look into any of the other stuff that was going on. Just wasn't advised well. He just wasn't advised well. And that's I think, a common thing. And so what I was going to say before, it looks like retaliation, Frank. It looks like the government is again now trying to retaliate against Flynn for causing problems for them by changing their sentencing guidelines now after all of this time. And I think that the judge asked that question specifically to see whether or not they'd do that.
Yeah, and that's what really gets me here too, is because even though it's sometimes very difficult for me to follow along with all the details, the one thing that I can perceive here is that as time is going on, and we're talking 3 years at this point, as time is going on, I think about those idiots in the comment section. Lock him away. And I feel like all of the perception over what he's actually facing and where this is going has been, he's been rooked of even fair representation of the actual events because of how badly things were going and the early goings and the plea and the withholding of exculpatory evidence and all that stuff. At this point, all that matters for anybody who has been a casual observer of this that tends to vote center left is that, oh, he already pleaded guilty and the Russians, and if he gets off now, it's because he brought in a hotshot lawyer that found a technicality and justice was not served again. Well, so that's the whole thing here. And you can tell, and you can say, well, it doesn't matter, at least the right thing is done, and I agree with that, you on that point, but we need once again to fix the culture, and the public needs to be shown something that is going to, you know, shift the paradigm a little bit here. And it's so hard, and everybody out there who is working the gaming the system knows how dire it is to go and grab the public's attention, which is why we have people, all of these people behind the scenes who are doing things like Andrew McCabe and Comey and Brennan and Clapper, the rest of them, they're all working at the television networks now because they have to get out in front into the public. They have to be there shaping it. We're still playing this very, very conservatively.
Yeah, but I think that we're going to get a lot more in this case before it's over than I think we're going to get concrete. So there's more. And I'm going to show you a clip, like, to your point in a little bit. I know we've been clip heavy the past couple of days, but it's important. I'm going to show you something to your point in a little bit that Jim Jordan was asking for Horowitz to come in and testify about the Comey report. And Nadler's like, nope. Mm. So we'll play that in a little bit. But let's listen to Sarah Carter, who's talking about something bombshell that came out in this hearing yesterday that not a lot of people are paying attention to.
Fox News contributor Sarah Carter. Sarah, let's get an update on this.
Well, I think what's so stunning, Sean, is that what the discovery of the January 30th, 2017 memo was that shortly after, on February 14th, was when James Comey met with President Donald Trump. And at this meeting, remember, this is one of the famous memos that he went after the meeting and basically wrote down the private conversations between he and President Trump. And that was specifically referring to Michael Flynn. Well, in those conversations, he never once told President Trump that the Department of Justice had exonerated Flynn, that they had found no evidence that he had either conspired or colluded with the Russians. There was nothing of the effect in that. Instead, he went forward with his memos and turned them over so that they could call a special counsel. Remember, this is when he leaked the documents to his friend, the professor, and then it went to the New York Times. And he specifically stated that this was to call a special counsel on President Trump for obstruction. Why specifically? Specifically because President Trump said, why don't we just let this go? There, you know, Flynn did nothing wrong. Think about this, Sean. At that time, during that meeting with President Trump, Comey knew Flynn did nothing wrong. There was no evidence whatsoever that Flynn had conspired with Russia or that there was any kind of conspiracy. And this is what's going to turn the tables and blow everything right out of the water, down to Representative Adam Schiff's plans on holding hearings and trying to get Flynn to testify before his committee, specifically on obstruction. It literally will blow, according to Sidney Powell, everything out of the water.
All right, Sarah Carter.
He knew Flynn was not, he was in no, oh God, these people are going to go, I'm telling you, Frank, they're going to go down. They're going to go down. There is just no way. So we've got, listen to this. I'm sorry. We've talked about this a lot, Frank, and this is something that just pissed me off to no end. I don't know at this point how you can. And Brian is a dear friend, and Jeff is a friend of mine, and both of them are on the Rod Rosenstein is a good guy train, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know after what I'm about to play how many more examples you need of why that probably or likely or may not be true other than this. And just to let you know, once I play this, actually, let me play it first, and then we'll talk about it here. Hold on. This is Sidney Powell.
Seeking to have the guilty plea thrown out, but my recollection is Sidney Powell, that in fact the FBI agents that interviewed him, they didn't think he was lying. And you talked about enormous amounts of pressure. I would assume that they were saying either you sign this, and now by this point he's bankrupt and selling his house. I assume they were saying stuff like, oh, let me guess, if you don't, we're going to go after your son who was in business with you.
Well, we know that Mr. Mueller got a letter from Mr. Rosenstein that allowed him to target Michael Flynn Jr. And there was significant pressure put on General Flynn to enter a guilty plea while they were hiding all the evidence that showed he had not been an agent of Russia,
so
that there
Sidney,
were no Logan Act violations. But we're not going to, the plan, at least right now anyway, is not to withdraw the guilty plea per se, but to have the entire prosecution dismissed because of the egregious misconduct.
So you withhold the exculpatory information. He's going bankrupt. No offense, but you lawyers can be very expensive sometimes, and not in your case. But withhold that information, then the agents that interviewed him didn't think he lied. You either say you lied or we're going after your kids. So I'm just guessing. A soldier, a man of honor, said, I'm not going to let my kid go down for something I didn't do. I'll dive on the sword. Why do I imagine that's the scenario that really unfolded?
Well, when you put together the fact that Mr. Mueller got the letter authorizing him to target Michael Flynn Jr., and they had seized Michael Flynn Jr.'s computers and electronic devices and those things, it's not too hard to imagine that that might have happened. I don't want to speak now to things that are not a matter of public record, but stay tuned because more and more will become apparent as we proceed through the litigation.
Sit down.
Rod Rosenstein wrote another scope memo allowing Robert Mueller to go after Flynn Jr.?
Yeah. I don't understand how that can be 18D chess. How's that 18D chess? I don't know.
I don't know how many more tallies you need to put on the left column here for bad guy. He signed the last FISA warrant, started the special counsel. You know, I mean, what else do you got? I mean, look at all this nonsense, the scope memos. He had to have known that Flynn didn't do anything wrong at this point. We just heard they knew in January. So what? I just don't understand it. I don't get it. And one thing was omitted from Jeff's article the other day about the 25th Amendment conversation. The line that I flagged, it looks like what we are doing is working and people are keeping their mouths shut. What does that mean? You remember?
Yeah, now I do.
He didn't even mention that in his article. And I don't know why I guess he's got his reasons for being so tied to this good guy narrative. And I'm just not able to do it. I mean, this is just, and you know, just to be fair, Michael Flynn's brother, not Joe, commented underneath my thread where I said this yesterday. And he said specifically, hold on. Thanks for your support, TB, spot on the bullseye. So I'd say they know more about this case than anybody else. And I got basically a yes, you're absolutely right, thumbs up from a member of the Flynn family.
To be honest, Tracy, I'm starting to lose faith in the idea that there are even white hats and black hats. I think that there's just situations and people making choices.
Obviously.
That's it. Not so obvious because people, I don't know.
I mean, everything's a choice. Everybody makes a choice. It's whether or not you make the right choice, that's the good choice, or the bad choice.
Yeah, but it's whether or not you're dedicated to one end or the other, like you are. I am the hero, or I am the villain. I want to dominate, and I want to liberate. I don't know. It's just one of those things. With Rosenstein, he's one of the guys that I never entertained the in cooperation with the good guys. The theories. I have entertained that with Mueller for a couple of months, and I forgot what else. I forgot who else, but Rosenstein, I don't know. It's always been, well, he's another one with the face.
We've talked about this several times on the show. Several times. And we've said the same thing. We both are on the same page about Rosenstein and also Ray. Sometimes you have facts in front of you. Unless Jeff and Brian know something that I don't know, which is possible, especially in Jeff's case, then I just don't see how you continue to support the guy without at least reporting on the fact that this is messed. And, you know, we haven't seen that memo. But knowing what we know and is talked about in the rest of this interview about even the Farah, and there was a thread by Technofog where he always gets the transcripts. God bless him. He got the transcript to the hearing. And they talk about in here how there was exculpatory information on the Farah charges even, because Flynn reported everything that he was doing to the DIA before he did it. And the government didn't disclose the basics to him. So he made decisions that he would never have made had he had known, like, he wasn't an expert on this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And it's just the entire thing is so messed up. So the judge even says, I'm going to find it here. First of all, there are material differences between the notes that the agents took from their interview with Flynn. So like their handwritten notes and then the 302s that they wrote from those notes. So they wrote one thing in their handwritten notes and another thing on the 302 form that does not match the handwritten notes. This case is so disgusting. If this case does not get completely thrown out, I swear I will pack it up because this is just absolutely gross. There's also a 302 missing. The FBI says they just misplaced from Pienka. The original 302 that was supposed to be written right when they interviewed him and not 7 weeks later. So in other words, they wrote 302s about an interview with the agents that originally interviewed Flynn, but don't have the 302s from one of them that they wrote right when they interviewed Flynn. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
At the 12/2018 sentencing hearing, the first one, Brendan Van Grack, who's the special counsel, basically accused Flynn of being a foreign agent. And it turns out, though, that Flynn had briefed the DIA on his meeting with Turkish officials, which was also kept from the judge and the defense in the case. So Sidney Powell says it pertains to their whole notion he was any sort of agent of any foreign country. And they also reported in that he had briefed the DIA before his meeting with the Turkish officials in New York, and that they then wanted to claim was a FARA violation. And all of this stuff also goes to some of the statements and the statements of offense. So there's a plethora of information out there that we know we've got little tidbits of that we need the actual documents to support and the notes to support. And then Judge Sullivan agrees with her and says, if there was actually no factual predicate for the FARA violation, which it appears there wasn't, then it shouldn't have been mentioned at all as a, quote, benefit that he cooperated in that case because there was no case to begin with. In other words, technically, the arrangement, the plea arrangement, is based on empty platitudes of nothing. It was not even a real... They're giving him points and benefits for cooperating in the FARA investigation of his business partner. Mm. And if the FARA violation was not predicated on any real facts, like what they did to Cohen, when they had Cohen plead guilty to campaign finance violations that there was no statute for. So Cohen pled guilty to a crime that didn't exist as a political tool to give the left more ammo against the president.
And did he even get anything reduced for him? What did he get in exchange for all that?
Oh, yeah, he did. Absolutely. He only got 4 years. He would have had decades.
Man, oh, man.
So basically, the same thing's happening here where... Let me get into this a little nitty gritty. Do you mind?
Go ahead.
Okay. So what's happening here is that... The government charges, says, Michael Flynn, we're going to charge you with these crimes unless you plead guilty to this and be a cooperating witness for us because we're going to go after your business partner in this big FARA scheme. And Mike Flynn says, okay, and signs the plea deal. Now we know pretty much under duress, guided by Rod Rosenstein. So he signs it and then they get through the proceedings and everything and he gets rid of his attorneys. He's a testifying witness for the government, and the government's asking him to lie about his knowledge of, they're asking him to lie about knowing that he was doing something wrong. Does this make sense?
Yes.
They're saying, Flynn, you're going to say that you knew that you signed something incorrect here, that you, when you signed it, you were aware it was not right, and you signed it anyway. And Flynn says, hold on a second, stop the boat. I'm not doing that. That's not true. And that's when things started to go south, where the government started to get bitchy, where, you know, when Powell came in and said, stop everything right here. Now we're finding out that the case that they brought and the FARA things that they said that Flynn did weren't even really FARA violations at all, because he informed the government about them before he did them. And because Flynn isn't at all that knowledgeable about the intricacies of FARA law, which is why he brought those original attorneys on, he doesn't understand all this, all the minutiae here. So he signs the plea under duress because they're going after his family. They're saying they're going to attack his son, just had a baby. They never did anything wrong in the first place with Farah, Flynn Intel Group. That's what Sidney Powell is saying here. So when the judges in this case trying to determine whether or not or how harshly to sentence Flynn, he is taking the Farah plea and his cooperation in the Farah trial as a benefit in points to Flynn. He cooperated with the government. That should decrease his sentence by X. But what the judge is saying is if there's no case at all, then that shouldn't even happen, which is a good thing for Flynn. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this shouldn't even count against him, let alone be a, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I know that was a little difficult to unpack, but.
No, it is. But this also goes to my point about why it's such a disservice that not only is the press in the state of disarray as it is, although with people like Jeff Carlson out there doing the work, and you and Molly Hemingway and everybody, that is the greatest bright spot out of all of this, but also a disservice that Flynn had any kind of lackluster legal representation in the first legs of this, because it is a very, very convoluted situation, and it takes clarity, and it takes people who are able to, who need to digest this for public, because the ramifications, what was done to keep this man in this position, in this predicament, and his family, that needs to be understood, because it's scary. Well, once again, here is a 30-year veteran of the United States Armed Forces, and was brought on to become a cabinet member of a new administration. So, very public figure, and a guy with a lot of skin in the game. How the hell would somebody like you or I match up to a system like this that is so stacked against any of the people it declares a target?
We wouldn't.
You know?
And that's
we wouldn't.
That's a big portion of Sidney Powell's constant public, her book, everything, is that the United States justice system has over a 97% conviction rate in federal courts. Why? Because people plead guilty to shit they didn't do all the time. Because they can't fight the government. So they plead guilty to things, they do their time, whatever, go to jail, pay the fine, whatever they gotta do, just to get it over with. Like, I can't fight for myself. Look at Robin Gritch, she's been fighting them for gosh knows how long now. It's a problem. And you know, as negative as we wanna be about this, this would never have happened before. This would have gone away. They never thought that we would get this far with the Trump still in office. I really don't think they did, because they played. And this is another thing that I want to make sure everybody understands. This is what happens when you bring a weak ass case to federal court. This is what happens when you don't have judges in your pocket, like Rudy Contreras, who was supposed to stay on as the judge in this case and got recused. This is what happens when you bring a weak case like Comey to court in a district where you have not only you have a judge who does the right thing. Sullivan does the right thing. So Sullivan and Powell go back and forth throughout the hearing. Will Chamberlain writes his thread. He says that, you know, early on, Sullivan made it clear that he took the motion very seriously, the motion that Powell had just filed. He noted that Flynn's plea agreement would not be relevant because that was an agreement between him and the parties, the government, that doesn't bind the judge. So he's saying that the Brady order that he put in immediately after he took the case was ruled the day in his court. Sidney Powell got to discuss her arguments about the motion, and Sullivan was paying close attention, even smiling. He was intrigued. He pushed back at times, but it was clear Sullivan and Powell had great rapport. The New York Times had argued that Powell's motion could anger Sullivan. Goldman, the reporter that did it, couldn't have been more wrong. Sullivan was curious and intrigued throughout, though he was clearly reserving judgment. Powell pointed out a number of missing documents and Brady failures, and Judge Sullivan was trying to push Powell on whether she should withdraw Flynn's plea. Instead, she wants the whole case thrown out. Then Judge Sullivan, on his own initiative, articulated how some of the undisclosed Brady material would have influenced his sentencing decision. And then prosecutors did suggest they would refile their sentencing memo. And then we got some dates after this was over. So the reply in opposition to Sidney Powell's motion that she just filed is due September 24th by noon. The government, Flynn has to reply to the government's response to that by the October 15th at noon. The sentencing is tentatively scheduled for December 18th at 11 a.m. And then there will be a hearing on October 31st on the Brady material. So Sidney Powell writes a motion saying the government needs to provide this Brady material. The government has a requirement to respond to that in writing by September 24th or whatever I said. Then after that response is submitted, Sidney Powell has to respond to the response, and then they go into court to talk about it. And that's that.
And so this might wrap up on Halloween?
Depending on how things go. I think that we may get past Halloween to actually see some of this exculpatory information, because the judge is going to need to see it to make the determination whether or not he's going to dismiss the case. Like, he's going to need to see what Sidney Powell's asking for. And they've already demonstrated that the government can't make that determination, because the government provided information to Powell in the past saying it wasn't exculpatory, and it ended up being exculpatory. So Powell's arguing that there's such a bias there that they don't even know what they're looking at anymore, so they have to turn everything over.
Mm.
And that, my friends, is how the cookie crumbles.
Well, it's how it's crumbling, at least. It's how it's crumbling.
So Joe Flynn was there in the court yesterday, and I'm really excited to get him back on so we can talk to him about everything that happened.
We'll be good to hear his side of things.
Yes. I think it went well for the Flynn family, in my own opinion, my humble opinion. But
none of that was live broadcast. We only had reporters on the inside giving accounts, right?
Yes, and I am going to make it a point to try and get up there. It really stinks because Halloween is like a kiddie holiday, you know?
Yeah, but it's in the middle of the week.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. I think it's like a Wednesday or Thursday this year.
It is a Thursday. You're right. I'm going to try and get up there for that. And then if there is a sentencing hearing, obviously, because I want to be in there so I can live tweet while this is going on.
I would love to take Halloween off this year and stay home and actually give out candy to the three kids that come by my house now.
I hate that there's no kids doing trick-or-treat anymore.
None. It used to be such a swamp of children. There's just everywhere. Like, you had to really just ride your bike around town that night because, A, you couldn't get anywhere, and B, you're too scared of hitting a kid you couldn't see.
Yeah.
Children everywhere, hiding in piles of leaves, and like, oh my, it used to be safer to drive in a blizzard than on Halloween night years ago.
I don't know what happened. 9/11.
Mm. I'm telling you, that's another thing that started declining after 9/11. I'm telling you, that's another thing I started getting it. I mean, we were already 17 at the time. So 9/11 around 2000, 2001, if we were hanging around on Halloween, we just wanted to be outside and walk around. We weren't asking for candy at that point. We were just outside, wanted to be in the atmosphere of it all and just walking around and stuff. But after that, it was really something else. Everybody was always, because we had the emergency scales that would go from orange, red, yellow to orange every Halloween night. So there was less and less going on. Kids were less and less unattended. And of course, they wanted to wrap up earlier and earlier. So I'm sure that some towns have fared better than others, but I can tell you it has evaporated over here by me.
So then I guess it really doesn't make sense for you to stay home that night.
I don't know. Maybe it makes sense to give out candy to the 10 children that come by and then just watch a couple of movies, have some people over and watch a couple of movies, put on Halloween and I don't know what else. What do you like watching on Halloween?
We always Anything? Used to watch the Ghost Hunters Marathon.
Ghost Hunters Marathon. That's not bad.
Yeah.
What about what's your favorite scary film? Do you like scary movies? Lauren doesn't.
I do.
What do you like?
I like The Others. I like those weird psychological sort of, I don't like the horror movies. I don't like horror movies.
So you don't like Hellraiser and Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yeah, that's a classic though. But no, I'm not one of those people that loves those gory horror movies like Halloween, Michael and all that nonsense. No, I like the ones that make you think and scare the crap out of you. Or like, you know, one of the best movies ever was, what's it called with Bruce Willis?
Sixth Sense?
Yeah. Yep.
No, I think the scariest part in the film is when he gets shot in the beginning. Scariest part in the film.
Yeah.
That is a major fear of mine.
Getting shot?
Finding a deranged person in your house.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Major.
Yeah, what do you even do?
So, right, yeah, what do you do?
I mean, Halloween is coming up. Craziness. Well, listen, we're done for today. We're done. So, you guys have been listening to the Dark Delight Podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
And me, Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, or RadioInfluence.com. And if there are any audio issues today, please forgive us because I had a software fart. And we'll talk to you soon.
Later, farty people.
This is A Place for My Head Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
This entry was one of the most difficult ones to put out on the site. It is the first thing I ever wrote down on paper with a Sharpie, and I still have it, actually. So maybe I can snap a pic of it and share it with you guys. But it's insanely personal, but the funny part about it is I even say it in the entry. It's not even about me. There's so many different things that plague other people. Maybe some of it's about me. Maybe I struggle with some of it, especially the anxiety part. But, you know, I mentioned other things that, you know, they're a part of my life. It's not me, but they're a part of my life. So it's something you still have to deal with, right? So I can maybe explain a little bit more after I read it. Here we go. First thing I wrote, addressing the demon. Anxiety is a bitch. Anxiety, f*** you. Bipolar personality. I don't want to talk to you. Depression is like the longest argument that doesn't end. And I don't have time for you. Why is this disease so mean? I've done everything I can do, far and in between. Why does this pain shed no blood? Why does this agony feel as if I'm drowning in a flood? I can't breathe. I'm uncomfortable in my own skin. Is there only one way out of this? Is it to give you one more sin? Fine then. What's next? Am I going to let my demons win? F*** you. I despise you for what you want me to do. I am better than this disease. I don't have to fall to my knees and make the demons ever so pleased. I am stronger than this. Give me everything you have. I will handle it with ease. And know this, I will fight for my family, fight for my right, fight for my blood, fight for my little girl, fight for my wife who saved my life. You see that? I won. I beat you. I know you don't care, but I don't give a about you. Sincerely, with care.
A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and Jerry P. Tuck can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.